Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hello there, Herman and Corin. Would love to chat today. We've talked about some in recent episodes. The rather heavy, depressing topic of accommodation and housing and how it's become such a challenge to get on the housing market in many places in the world, and how the experience of renting has become this kind of humiliating and just terrible experience. I'm extrapolating from my experience as an English-speaking immigrant to Israel, but I've seen in my 10 years living here just the worst of what landlords can do, ranging from, as I recounted, someone ripping out my toilet while I lived there, to having, you know, a severe leak dripping upon me as I try to sleep, and then the landlord doing nothing, even though there's a law saying that they need to remediate that within a certain period of time. Those are just two among many data points I could cite as to the bleak. And I don't know, it's hard to find words to describe it. But I think one of the things that really does damage, besides the fact that when a landlord decides arbitrarily to end your lease, as happens in Israel, one more example is my wife and I are first place together. We were living for a number of years. We just felt like we were settling in. And then the landlord decides, wait, I want to give this place to my niece. And suddenly, with one stroke of a pen, one thought, one email, your world is turned upside down. You need to spend all of your time, all of your free time, trying to find a new place as quickly as possible, being taken on viewings, trying to avoid the traps you fell into before, trying to find somewhere habitable, trying to make sure you don't sign on with a slumlord. Then, getting out of the old place, getting into the new place, every single time, a huge amount of bureaucracy involved in transferring back ownership of the government authorities to the monthly payments are known, disconnecting internet, getting new internet, often finding the internet in the new place is slower and older. Electricity bills, I mean, it's a massive amount of work. I've been through this rigmarole every couple of years for the past 10 years, and I'm just honestly kind of exhausted at this point. I like to sometimes think, when I'm faced with situations in life that are exasperating and kind of depressing, I try to think of ways that the situation can be hacked. That's my tech mentality coming at it. And that's why sometimes I ask you guys very straight, very odd questions, like, how does this group do it? I mentioned the military a few times, not because I'm particularly a military boffin, but when I think about people that do logistics really well, I tend to think of the military. I think it might be because I watched a great documentary on a flight once about how the US has the logistics that the armed forces do is just mind-bogglingly brilliant. UPS, DHL, when it works, when people figure out logistics, it's pretty cool. And what I've really been thinking about between my last move and this one is, after moving in, I set up this system called Homebox, which is a home inventory system. And you basically create boxes and tag your stuff with NFC tags or barcodes. And a large part of my reason was, okay, I want to be as lean as possible for future moves. And B, to help the moves be as streamlined as possible, I want to know where everything is and have it in an order. And when I think about when you see people moving, roadies are the other ones I like to talk about, right? Because I grew up seeing, you know, bands moving those big hard cases. But those two groups, maybe diplomats are a better case study, diplomats and the military. People that are amazingly adept at relocating frequently. And I think there's two aspects that would be interesting to talk about here. One practical, one psychological. Practical aspect is, what can one do if you do find yourself in this situation for economic reasons or whatever, that you're moving every few years? What are the practical steps one can do to make sure that you're always in a kind of prepared position for the next move, that you never find that when you get the surprise email from a landlord that you suddenly have to kind of, you know, drop everything, and it becomes another massive stress. How can you become a real expert at the moving process? And the second one is, I find that the psychological thing is a huge, usually hard blow. And we haven't really gotten into this kind of territory before. But I think there is just, there's something to be said for the psychology of moving and what it does to people who find themselves in this situation. As I mentioned, I grew up in a home, and I don't think since I've moved here, I've ever really felt that I was at home in a particular place, because until you own, and based on prior experiences, it feels more like a box you're temporarily occupying. You never know when it's going to be taken away, or the landlord's going to make it unaffordable. And that's, again, another conversation about dignified renting that we talked about and ways to legislate that. But failing those provisions, and as we have it in Israel at the moment, it's kind of, they can do what they want. And it's traumatic, and it's really unsettling. But again, we can kind of make the best out of what life gives us sometimes. And I'd love to hear your perspective on that. Maybe there's a positive to be drawn from this too. How can one sort of make peace with this process and not become infuriated by all the things that I described that are, I think, pretty reasonably infuriating? It can be something as triggering for me as tearing up and laying Ethernet cables that have to be flat because I can't drill through walls as a renter. And you know what? I've done this 100 times, and I'm setting up the network again, and just doing that process over and over again is what psychologically will drive me crazy, because I just feel I'm so done with this. So Herman and Corin, sorry to unload on you guys, but it's dark. It's a dark topic, and I think it's really important that we get into it. Let's talk about renting, and two aspects to that. How can we be pros at the moving game, and how can we sort of become psychologically resilient to the otherwise very stressful nature of our accommodation being an unpredictable force in our lives? Herman and Corin, over to you.
You know, Herman, I was looking at a stack of cardboard boxes in the hallway this morning, and it hit me just how much a simple square of corrugated paper can trigger a sense of impending doom.
Herman Poppleberry here, and Corin, I know exactly what you mean. It is that specific shade of brown that says, your life is about to be dismantled and shoved into a van.
Exactly. And that feeling is really at the heart of what our housemate Daniel sent us this week. He was opening up about the absolute grind of the rental market, especially here in Jerusalem. He is an immigrant, so he has seen some of the most, let's call them creative, interpretations of landlord responsibilities.
Creative is a very polite way to put it. I think Daniel mentioned everything from a landlord neglecting a massive ceiling leak to someone just deciding to end a lease early because a relative needed the place. It is a very precarious way to live.
It really is. And it is not just the physical move. It is the bureaucratic mountain you have to climb every single time. Transferring the Arona, which is the municipal property tax here, setting up the electricity, the water, and then the inevitable battle to get decent internet speeds in a building that might have been standing since the Ottoman Empire.
Well, the good news on that front is that recent reports indicate significant progress in fiber optic rollout across Israel, with many households now having access. But you are right, the process of actually getting a technician to show up and flip the switch, that is where the gray hair comes from. 1-1.
Daniel was asking how the professionals do it. He looks at groups like the military, or diplomats, or even concert roadies, people who relocate constantly and seem to have it down to a science. He has even started using an open source inventory system called Homebox with near-field communication, or NFC tags, to try and hack the process.
I love that he is using Homebox. It is a fantastic self-hosted tool. But before we get into the tech, we should probably address the elephant in the room, which is the actual state of the market we are living in. If you feel like it is harder than ever to find a place, you are not imagining it.
Right. Recent data shows very low vacancy rates in major Israeli cities like Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, often below 5%, making the market highly competitive. When the market is that tight, the power balance shifts entirely to the landlords.
It really does. Average rents for two-bedroom apartments in Jerusalem are high, often several thousand shekels monthly, with premium neighborhoods like Rehavia or the German colony commanding even higher rates. and because there are so few empty units, landlords feel like they do not have to fix that leak or replace that broken water heater because there is a line of 10 other people waiting to take the keys.
That is the humiliating part Daniel mentioned. You are paying a huge portion of your income for a basic human necessity, yet you are treated like a guest who should be grateful for the roof. So, let's dig into his first question. How can we be in a prepared position for the next move so it is not a massive stress? How do the pros handle this?
Well, let's start with the military, specifically the United States military. They have this process called a permanent change of station, or PCS. About 400,000 service members go through this every single year. It is one of the largest relocation operations on the planet.
And they have a reputation for being efficient, right?
Historically, yes, but here is a bit of misconception busting for you. Even the pros are struggling right now. There has been a huge transition over the last year to what they call the Global Household Goods Contract. They hired a single private consortium to manage all the moves, and it has been a bit of a disaster. We are seeing reports of packers just not showing up and delivery dates being missed by weeks.
That is actually oddly comforting. If the Department of Defense, with its massive budget, can struggle with a move, maybe we should give ourselves a bit of a break.
Exactly. But the reason they attempt to standardize it is the key takeaway. In the military, your move is governed by something called the Joint Travel Regulations. It is a massive document that spells out exactly what you are allowed to move, how much it can weigh, and what your rights are. For a civilian, the lesson there is standardization.
You mean like having a set of rules for your own household?
Precisely. If you know you are going to move every 2 or 3 years, you have to stop buying furniture that only fits in one specific corner of one specific room. You start looking at modular pieces. You look at the weight. The pros use weight allowances as a mental filter. If an item is heavy, bulky, and not essential, it is a liability.
That reminds me of concert roadies. I used to be fascinated by those huge black flight cases you see backstage. Everything has a custom-cut foam insert. If a piece of gear is not in its slot, you know immediately.
That is the peak of relocation logistics. Roadies operate on the one-in, one-out philosophy. They also use color coding and standardized labeling that can be read from 10 feet away in a dark stadium. That is where Daniel's idea of using Homebox and NFC tags really shines.
Let's talk about Homebox for a second. For those who do not know, it is a self-hosted inventory manager. You can run it on a small home server or even a Raspberry Pi. You log every item you own, where it is located, and you can even attach photos or manuals.
And recent versions of Homebox include features like item templates. So if you have 20 boxes of books, you do not have to type book 20 times. You just use a template.
Daniel mentioned using NFC tags and barcodes. I was reading a thread on the self-hosted subreddit about this recently. Some people prefer QR codes because you can just print them on a regular label maker. But NFC is interesting because you can just tap your phone to the side of a sealed box and see exactly what is inside without having to open the camera app or align a scanner.
It is the ultimate lazy logistics win. Imagine you are in your new apartment surrounded by 50 identical brown boxes. You are looking for the coffee grinder because you desperately need caffeine to continue. Instead of tearing open 10 boxes, you just walk around tapping your phone until it says, Kitchen, Small Appliances.
That is a massive stress reducer. But there is a technical hurdle there, isn't there? Writing those tags can be a bit of a chore.
It can be. There was actually a GitHub issue discussed recently where users were asking for a more streamlined way to write tags directly from the Homebox interface. Right now, a lot of people use a separate app like NFC Tools to write the URL of the item into the tag. It is a bit of a manual process, but if you do it as you pack, it pays off tenfold on the other end.
So, step one for being prepared is an active inventory. But what about the bureaucracy? Daniel mentioned the nightmare of transferring government payments and utilities.
This is where being an expert relocator means having a move folder. And I do not mean a physical folder, though that helps. I mean a digital repository of every account number, every previous bill, and a checklist of every agency that needs to be notified. In Israel, that means the water company, the electric company, and the municipality for the Arona.
And the internet. Do not forget the internet.
Never. Especially now that fiber is increasingly the standard. One thing a lot of people do not realize is that even if your new building has fiber infrastructure, the previous tenant might not have released the line, or there might be a physical port issue. The pros call the ISP 2 weeks before they move, not the day after.
That is a great tip. It is about anticipating the bottleneck points. The bureaucracy is a bottleneck. The physical moving of the boxes is a bottleneck. If you can clear the bureaucracy before you even pick up a roll of tape, the move feels 50% lighter.
I also think there is a financial logistics side to being prepared. In the military, they have something called dislocation allowance, which is a flat payment to cover the random costs of moving, like buying new curtains or cleaning supplies. As a renter, you should have your own dislocation fund.
Because there is always something. You move in and realize the light fixtures are different, or you need a specific type of adapter for the stove.
Exactly. Having that money set aside specifically for the move tax prevents the stress from bleeding into your regular budget.
Okay, so we have the practical side. Modular furniture, digital inventory with Homebox, a bureaucracy checklist, and a dedicated move fund. But Daniel's second question is much deeper. He asked about the psychological side. How do we become resilient to the stress of an unpredictable housing situation? How do we make peace with the process of moving?
That is the hard part, Korn, because humans are territorial creatures. We have a biological need for a den. When that den is temporary or subject to the whims of a landlord, it creates a baseline of anxiety.
I think there is a term for it in environmental psychology called place attachment. It is the emotional bond between a person and a place. When you are a frequent mover, that bond is constantly being severed. It can feel like you are living in a hotel, even if you have your own stuff there.
I have actually thought about this a lot. One way to build resilience is to shift your place attachment from the four walls of the apartment to the objects within them. There is a concept in sociology called home as a portable concept.
Portable home? Like a turtle carrying its shell?
Sort of. It is about identifying the anchors of your daily life. For some people, it is a specific rug, or a set of lamps with a warm color temperature, or even the way their desk is set up. If you can replicate your sensory environment in every new place, the transition becomes much easier on the brain.
That makes so much sense. I remember when we moved into this place, the first thing you did was set up your espresso machine and your specific collection of nerdy coffee mugs.
Guilty as charged. That first cup of coffee in a new kitchen using my own machine and my own mug told my brain, okay, we are home now. The scenery changed, but the ritual is the same.
I think another psychological hack is to stop viewing a rental as a temporary box and start viewing it as a platform. If you treat a place like you are just passing through, you never truly settle, and that leads to that feeling of exhaustion Daniel mentioned.
Right. Even if you only have a 1-year lease, hang the pictures. Plant the herbs on the windowsill. The psychological cost of not settling is actually higher than the effort of unsettling when you eventually have to leave.
That is a really profound point, Ermin. By refusing to settle because you are afraid of the move, you are essentially living in the stress of the move for the entire year.
Exactly. You are paying the emotional rent twice. Once in anxiety and once in the actual move, you might as well enjoy the space while you have it.
There is also something to be said for the minimalist approach to resilience. The less you own, the less the landlord can hold over you. If a move is a massive undertaking involving 3 trucks and 10 friends, it is a trauma. If it is a van and a couple of hours, it is just an afternoon chore.
That is the roadie mindset again. They do not carry anything they do not need for the show. For us, the show is our life. If you have boxes that have not been opened in 3 moves, those boxes are not stuff. They are anchors dragging you down.
Daniel mentioned being an immigrant, which adds another layer. You are already in a state of transition. Your sense of home is already stretched across borders. I think for immigrants, finding community outside the home is the ultimate resilience hack. If your neighborhood feels like home, the specific apartment matters a little less.
That is so true. If you have a favorite coffee shop, a regular grocery store where the owner knows you, and friends nearby, the apartment is just where you sleep. The home is the neighborhood.
And that is something a landlord cannot take away with a single email. They can take the apartment, but they cannot take your social network or your knowledge of the local hidden gems.
I also want to touch on the legal side of psychological resilience. A lot of the stress comes from feeling powerless. In Israel, there are actually more protections for renters than people realize, though they are often ignored. Knowing the fair rental law can give you a sense of agency.
Right, like the fact that a landlord has to fix essential issues, like leaks or electrical problems within a reasonable time frame. If you know your rights, you are not a victim, you are a participant in a contract.
Exactly. It changes the power dynamic from, please do not kick me out, to, we have a legal agreement that we both must follow. Even if the landlord is a jerk, having that framework helps you stay calm.
So, to wrap up the psychological side, standardize your sensory environment, settle fully even if it is temporary, build a home in your neighborhood, and know your legal rights to maintain a sense of agency.
And do not forget to use the tech to offload the mental burden. If Homebox knows where your birth certificate is, you do not have to panic search for it when the municipality asks for it.
I think we have covered a lot of ground here, from the struggles of the Jerusalem rental market to the logistical precision of a military PCS move, though maybe not the new global household goods version.
Definitely not that version. Stay away from that if you can.
And the psychological shift from temporary living to portable home. It is a heavy topic, but I think there is a lot of hope in the hacking mindset Daniel mentioned. We are not just at the mercy of the market. We can build systems to protect our peace.
Well said, Korn. And hey, if you are listening and you have your own moving hacks or a home box setup that would put a professional roadie to shame, we want to hear about it.
Absolutely. You can get in touch with us through the contact form at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We love hearing how you guys are tackling these everyday challenges.
And if you are enjoying the show, we would really appreciate a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and join our little community of curious explorers.
It really does. We are on Spotify, and you can find our full archive and RSS feed at myweirdprompts.com.
Thanks to Daniel for sending in this prompt. It is a tough one, but a really important conversation to have.
Definitely. We live together, so we are all in this cardboard box-filled boat together.
Until next time, I am Herman Pobbleberry.
And I am Korn. Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. Keep your inventory updated and your coffee mugs handy.
See you next week.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.